And welcome to Cruise Before Ever Reviews In, the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Cara Westworth, and today I am rejoined by Jimmy to talk about Rogue Nation Part 2.
Oh, I'm so glad we broke when we did. That last part is so stressful.
So stressful. You don't like water. You don't want to watch that scene. My God. I can barely breathe watching that scene, knowing that Tom Cruise can breathe underwater for 6 minutes. If you haven't listened to the last episode, please do, just to bring you back in case it's been a week since you've listened in. Basically, they have managed to get this ledger of information that Solomon Lane is desperate for. Ilsa Faust helped Ethan and Benji get it, but just as they thought she was on their side, she zaps Benji with a defibrillator and runs off with the USB. So now they've got to go chase after her. Chase her they do. So this is another epic, it goes straight into another epic scene.
I think this was actually brilliant because this scene is much more comedic.
Yes.
This is like a Three Stooges cartoon.
Yes, it's a little bit slapsticky. So basically, Ethan pretty much died and has been brought back. So he is out of it. But, you know, they've got to go. So once Benji rouses after being defibrillated, they run out and they get into the car. Meanwhile, Ilsa has been picked up by some of Lane's goons and she's sitting up to her on a motorbike. They're like, where's Ethan? She's like, he's dead. And just as they're about to zoom off of their motorbike, she does this really cool thing where she goes like a burnout, spins around and knocks their bikes over so she can get away from them, which, why not? Everyone has dreamt of knocking over a big like a dominoes effect of motorbikes in their life. So she zooms off. So Ethan, like, he tries to jump over the car in true Ethan fashion, but trips and just falls over. Benji's like, you can't drive, you were dead a second ago. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm fine. He's clearly not fine. Racing around in a BMW through the back streets of Morocco. They see Ilsa. They start chasing. It's pretty quick little zipping around, you know, hitting wicker baskets. Things go flying, kind of that one of those typical kind of chase scenes, which is very, very fun. Then they go over some stairs and Benji's like, stairs, 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 stairs. And they just go doo-doo, doo-doo, over these stairs. And like, it's really cute where Benji like smashes his head on the dashboard and just turns and glares at Ethan. Like Ethan did it on purpose. Yeah. So it's really cute and funny how they do it. They actually come zooming out of a side street and like sideswipe a car, stop, and they look up and it's Luther and Brandt in this giant four-wheel drive just who are looking for them and like, oh, there they are.
It was a great, great line, actually, where Luther said, no, what I said was, I can locate him. It's up to you to find him. And that scene happens and Luther's like, oh, found him. Beautiful. Like I said, the comic timing in this scene is impeccable.
Yeah, they're going, they're facing the opposite way. So Benji and Ethan zoom off and this big four-wheel drive and he's like, come on, hurry up. And he's like, you're the one who had to get a 4x4, didn't you? He's like, do you want me to drive? And they're like bickering like a little old couple. And like, this is so slow. And slowly zoom off after a million miles behind them because Ilsa is off like a rocket on the motorbike. There's all the other motorbikes are now chasing them both and they're getting shot out and it's a really good car chase. At some point, like, and also he uses the car as a really good weapon to like knock people off the bikes. Like he just chucks it, does a handbrake stop and spins around and then just flips off people off their bikes and really cool.
Those bikers are dead.
Yeah, they're like, just squished. They just see cars hitting a bar behind them. That's what happens when you fuck with Ethan Hunt in a big car, eh?
It was such a good palate cleanser to the incredibly stressful, nail-biting edge of the seat scene that preceded it.
Yep.
To being just this comic Bugs Bunny cartoon with car crashes and explosions.
Especially because like the last one, it was all really dark and gloomy and, you know, Ethan died. But then all of a sudden everything's really, it's Morocco, so it's really bright and colourful. And yeah, it was, like you said, a really good palate cleanser for the stress before. The car chase ends. They're somehow going backwards and Ethan's like, you put your seatbelt on, right? He's like, you're asking me now? And he speeds up. I don't know if BMW's going to go that fast in reverse, but he just flies out. And I guess Ethan knows the streets of Morocco because he knows that they go airborne. They go in the air and then they just crash into like a big car park kind of thing and just turn around, smash. Benji's knocked out. Ethan is awake and they're upside down and they can see.
The airbags finally deploy.
Yes.
Another comic bit of genius is even after, I love it because Benji hit his head and then the airbags deploy.
There's a guy on the motorbike pulls up and you can see him, like, he gets a gun out and he's walking up and Ethan's like trying to get out. And then all of a sudden, doosh, the 4x4 comes and just hits this guy. And luckily they're saved by that big beast of a car. As soon as they get him out and they're like, okay, we're together, what do we do? And Ethan just like, nah, I'm out of here. Just jumps on a motorbike. Obviously, barely still like knowing where he is, mm-hmm. but just grabs a pair of sunglasses, just jumps on a motorbike and keeps chasing because he sees all the bikes off in the distance. And now there is suddenly a motorbike chase on big, dusty, open highways. And it's intense, because once again, he's not wearing a helmet. I don't know why Tom Cruise refuses to wear helmets on motorbikes. Your beautiful head will not survive this, Ethan. Tom Cruise. Yeah, and this is one of those ones that was all real. You watch the making of and it's fucking mad. So he's chasing them, he's knocking people off again, and he finally, they're starting to go up a big windy road up a big mountain, and he gets stuck behind a big slow truck and he's trying to dart out, and he finally catches up to her, except what she does is she stops her motorbike and she just steps on the road, knowing he's not going to hit her. So he smashes off the bike, goes rolling, and she just has a sad look and just gets on the motorbike and drives away, and Ethan's lying there going, ah, shit.
What I love about this is the first time in 5 movies I've actually had doubts whether or not Ethan Hunt can do this. You know, after being through, it's beginning to feel like Ethan Hunt has too much confidence in his own abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good seeing that in this movie, that he is a human being and that he can be quite vulnerable. And the amount of times that he's just faced with situations that he can't handle
mm-hmm.
by himself was just a really, really nice insertion into this movie.
They've lost this file and they all meet up at a dusty old bar and Benji, tell us that wasn't the only copy of the ledger, right? And Benji's like, am I a fucking dumbass or what, you idiots? And so they have it. They haven't lost the mission. The only problem is Solomon Lane's going to have the file too, and he's the last person they want to have this file. But so anyway, Ilsa is actually back in London. So as it turns out, this was what she thought was going to be her out of this mission, is that she would present this information to Attlee, who's the head of British intelligence. And he's basically nah, you're not out. You've still got work to do, and lets her take the USB, and she's just like, yeah, great. So he's set up as a fucking prick of a character. I don't know who plays him. Attlee's played by Simon McBurney. I actually don't know what he's from.
Me neither, but I loved him. One of the things that's very consistent about this movie is everyone's motivations,
mm-hmm.
and that everyone is doing something for a good reason. And we'll get back to him, but I really felt like no one is evil in this movie because no one is intentionally evil aside from the evil guy.
Except right? for the bad guy. Yeah.
Everyone else is just trying to do their jobs and look after themselves.
And what they think they're doing is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Which I guess is also what the bad guy is doing. Even though he's doing evil things, he still thinks this is the right way to...
Yeah.
The ends justify the means kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Luther, meanwhile, has opened up the disc and has gone, I can't access this. This is a red box. And luckily, Brand's there so they can explain what the red box is, because Brand's a big idiot. It doesn't know anything. Basically, a red box is... It can only open by one person. In this case, it's the Prime Minister of England, of Britain. And it's all these different things that he has to do, but only the Prime Minister can do. So they're like, well, that's obviously what Solomon Lane's going to do next. He needs to access the Prime Minister to open this box and get what he needs out of it. They have no idea what's on it at this stage. So meanwhile, Ilsa takes the disc back to Lane. He says he still trusts her, but he's growing very impatient. However, there's a big spanner in the works because their guys look at the disc. There's actually nothing on it. And she says, I've looked at it. I know that it's a red box. What is it? Yeah, then they find out there's nothing on the disc. And they're like, okay, Ilsa, you fucked us. So once again, do not know what Ilsa is doing and who she's siding with or whatever. So
this was a great twist. This was so good because instantly it points to something strange going on and that no one actually knows everything about what they're doing.
Mm.
And I love that. The intrigue in this movie was stunningly well plotted. I really liked that.
I think at this point that means Lane doesn't trust Ilsa anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah, I got that vibe. It wasn't actually stated because, again, he said...
Well, he does that thing with her face. Yeah, he just kind of grabs her face.
Vulcan mind meld, which was he's sort of... It's interesting because I think he also picked up that she didn't know that it was going to be blank.
Yeah.
And he actually... What was the line? I'm curious to see who you blame this on, which is, again, it's like... I want to trust you. I want you to be on our side. I think that you're in the
why
right.
Are you? Why else would you be here unless you were on our side? But...
Yeah. Why would you give it? Why would you come back and give us a blank disc?
Yeah.
What's going on here? There's a lot of intrigue in this movie, and it's really it's good, solid. It all makes sense. It all is very well motivated. It's a very well written movie, and it's a Mission Impossible movie. And those are things that I'm still coming to terms with.
I'm glad you are. So they now back in London. They're all back in London, and they meet at Liverpool train station. Now, I was telling you before, I was in Liverpool's train station just over a year ago. It's also where in the first Mission Impossible, when Ethan runs into old mate at the who's been shot, and I can't remember any of their names.
It's John Voight.
John Voight's character, yeah. So when I was there, it was our last day in London, and my whole thing was, great, we're going, I'm just going to take a photo at the photo phone booth and like where they were sitting in this scene, and then my husband's going to take photos, and it was going to be great, except we got lost. We're trying to walk to the station, and by the time we got to the train station, we only had a very short amount of time to get back to where we were staying to collect our stuff to go to the airport, and Ben's like, we just don't have time. And I cried and threw a tantrum because I didn't get to recreate my photos, and Ben's like, oh, we'll come back, I promise. But yeah. But then we took some good photos in Paris from Mission Impossible Fallout, so which I still haven't even edited, and it's been a year, so maybe I shouldn't bitch and moan so much. But anyway, there's a special place in my heart, Liverpool train station, because I think about Mission Impossible all the time. And actually, the year before that, I'd been in London, and I spent a lot of time at that train station, and it was just before I became a Tom Cruise fanatic. So I missed out twice in a year. Anyway, I digress. So Ilsa is meeting with Ethan. So they're meeting, and everyone, like Luther and Brant and Benji, all around, all on the earpieces. And she's like, you knew that you gave me a blank disc. And Benji's like, no, that was definitely the exact same thing we had. So they've realized something's going on. And Ethan's like, did you have it in your possession the whole time? And she's like, things back to when she gave it to Atlee, she put it down in his newspaper. And obviously he's had something under there to wipe. Like, they literally show us the phone deleting the
erasing
files.
Erasing disc. Yeah. So good.
So, yeah, Atlee has set her up and is just throwing her to the wall. She's like, they don't care if we live or die. Like, she kind of has like a personal sort of crisis there and then, because she's like, they don't care if we live or die. Like, we, any side we choose, we think is right because we choose to. There's no right or wrong, really. They're all as fucked as each other, basically. And so she sort of goes through, here are the different options. And he's like, you can hand me in, proves the syndicate, but Lane might get free. Or you can do this, sell him, let him be caught, but blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, they're all good options. And she's like, the third option is come away with me right now. So this is the first time that we see Ethan Hunt have kind of a love interest, not explicit or anything, but it's like, she's just like, I like you. I think you like me. Let's just get out of here. We can do whatever we want. We've got passports. We've got money. We're very, very clever people. We'll be fine. Ethan's just too dedicated to the cause to do that. But you can see, he thinks about it.
You can see her heartbreak too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just tragic.
Please. Like, she's been sold out by British intelligence. She's probably going to get killed by Solomon Lane at some point. Like, she's desperate, and Ethan's kind of like, I can't.
She just wants to take a nap.
Yeah, I know. After all these times, like, the better times, Ethan has the shit beaten out of him and then just hobbles off and continues. I'm like, you just need to sleep, my friend. Like, you just need to lie down for 12 hours and just not move and just lick your wounds. But they never seem to have that time. Good on them, I guess. I guess that's why they get paid the big IMF bucks. Ethan's like, okay, well, obviously you've been told to give me a message from Lane. What is the message? So she hands him his phone, and he goes to look at it, and all it does is like emit like a high frequency sound that fucks with all their audio equipment. They're like, oh, what was that? And then Ethan looks around and he's like, Brant, Luther, Benji's not there.
Benji's been captured.
Like, Benji. So he looks at the phone and he just sees footage of the bone doctor like grinning at the camera with Benji, and he's like, they're in the car park. So they run down. The first bit of Tom Cruise running, I think.
Yes.
This movie has no running.
Yeah, no, because,
they haven't had a chance
fair
yet.
Fair point, yeah.
So a tiny bit of running. They run down the car park, see the car screeching out, and they've lost Benji. And as we know from Ethan, like, even though part of the job description is you die for the cause, Benji will not let his friends or co-workers die unless it's the last resort kind of thing. So, yeah, so now they've got to try and work out how the fuck do we save Benji, and also at the same time bring Solomon Lane, the most evil dude around, in. He gets a phone call from Lane. The ultimatum is, if you want Benji back, you need to bring us the disc by midnight, fully unlocked. So that's what you got to do. And then so they're like, the only way to do that is to kidnap the Prime Minister. So guess what they're going to do, guys? Can you guess?
Oh my God. Like, yeah, again, the outlandishness is just so beautiful. I love how we just have to kidnap the Prime Minister now.
Oh, meanwhile, Ilsa has also gotten away. So we still, once again, don't know. Like, is she just going to leave and like start a new life, or is she still working for someone? We don't know. So they have a big argument about it, what they're going to do. And Ethan's just like, no, if we warn the British that this is what's going to happen, then that's what Lane wants, and then that will fuck up. So at this point, he actually sounds like a madman. Like, yes, he doesn't...
this is exactly, yeah. It's like, if you hadn't have seen the movie beforehand, you would not have believed what he was saying. And it was like, I love that.
And because, you know, only a brand especially hasn't seen what Ethan has seen in this movie so far. So it sounds like the ravings of a madman. And he's just like, okay, but, you know, Lucy's kind of like, sometimes Ethan is the only person who sees the truth as it is. Like, we all think it's crazy. But, you know, so they, I don't know how they convince him. But Brand on the sly actually does a little sneaky little phone call to Huntley and is like, yeah, so, you know, for Ethan to catch the syndicate, he needs to basically kidnap the PM. We're about to go there right now. Yeah, just as your heads up. But can you promise me you won't kill them? And Huntley's like, they go, I don't know, some royal building. I'm not that familiar with royal buildings in London. But they go there. There's like some sort of auction or something going on, and the Prime Minister turns up, and it's all very flash. And Huntley goes and actually says to him, there's a national security issue. Can you please come with me? They go to his lavish back room, and Attlee is there as well. Everyone's been briefed, and they explain to the Prime Minister. Okay, so basically this guy called Ethan Hunt from the IMF is out to get you. He wants you to open this red box that he believes will bring down the syndicate. The Prime Minister's like, the syndicate?
Not those guys. That can't be.
You mean that hypothetical thing you came up with, Attlee, that was never meant to happen? And they're all like, what? Because then Huntley's like, wait a minute, the syndicate's real?
I love this. This was so good. I love it because Ethan Hunt is best when he's playing poker and doing the double bluff and getting people to reveal information that they, you know, to people that they shouldn't be. And that's been one of the highlights of the movie. He finally does it here. And it was just delicious because not only was Alec Baldwin in the room with him, so was Jeremy Renner. And everything, suddenly they're like, oh no.
Because they're like, hang on a minute, does Solomon Lane ring a bell? He's like, yeah, he was a British agent who died, right? Or something like that. And they're like, ah, shit, Ethan's been right all along. But luckily that they had it all figured out, that was the way it was going to turn, because bam, it's a mask. It turns out Attlee was Ethan Hunt all along. Sucked in, idiots.
So happy we got a mask pull.
I know, because I, even watching it this time, I'm like, hang on, is there a mask in this movie? Like, they show a mask making machine at one point. But anyway, there is definitely a mask scene. It was Ethan sneaking around as Attlee and getting all that information divulged.
What I love, though, is the Prime Minister's description of exactly what the syndicate is, which is the idea, which I don't think we've actually talked about. The idea of the syndicate is, here are all of these agents that we presume are dead that we are going to recruit for British intelligence, which was the original idea behind that. And the Prime Minister has explained exactly that this was an operation that we didn't support. It's an operation that we wanted to try, and like, it was an idea that never moved past the planning stages that is now real. And I love that. I love that instantly everything makes sense to everyone.
And they kind of reveal as well that not only was it only meant to be hypothetical, but Attlee went behind the Prime Minister's back, set it all up. So basically this ledger is actually all of the money, like billions of dollars, that were meant to fund this syndicate that was basically, to sort out their bad guys in these really ultra sneaky espionage-y ways. So because Attlee put it in place and had Lane as the head guy, and Lane flipped it around and turned on him, Attlee's just been scrambling to try and cover it up because he is done goofed up real bad.
Which explains why he wiped the disc and suddenly everyone makes sense, and everyone's motivations at this point in the movie became very clear.
Yes.
And it was just like, okay, let's go to the fireworks show and finish this one off, because now we know what everyone is here for. We know why everyone is doing something. We know who we're supposed to be going for and who we're supposed to be going after. It's just a deliciously well-crafted script in this movie.
Absolutely. So they set it up. So, Attlee shoots. So before it's revealed to be Ethan, Attlee shoots the Prime Minister with a tranquilizer dart, which is when he does the big reveal. Meanwhile, the real Attlee turns up and he tries to come in. They're like, oh, we were told not to let anyone in. He's like, who told you that? He's like, you? And so Attlee bursts in and everything is completely revealed. Poor old Prime Minister's like, whoa. because he's been drugged. And
I didn't know if this scene was supposed to be funny or not.
I think it was a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Prime Minister's drugged out of his mind, giving secret code words to...
Yeah, so he has to open the red box, and like he's like drunkenly, slurringly like reading out the little script he has to read out for the voice activation thing. It's very cute. And he's like, "Atlee shot me," which is really cute. We're now cutting to Benji with Solomon Lane. Solomon's going to do whatever he can to get what he needs, and he, knowing full well the kind of person Ethan is, that he won't let Benji die unless it's completely out of his control. So they meet up. Benji has a jacket just full of bombs, I guess, on just, him, a big timer on him. He has the contact in so that Lane can see him, because I think earlier on Ethan sees a contact, which is, I think, how he knows that it's obviously a former agent previously, because that's such a, you know, spy sort of level of tech, which they use a lot in the last movie.
Mm.
So, yeah, Benji's on this bomb, and the thing is that you have to give me this red box in order for me to give him back, and Ethan has done it, pulled another little trick up his sleeve. Turns out Ethan has a photographic memory of preposterous proportions, because he says, "I'm not giving you the thing because I am the red box. I memorized all the numbers on there. So if you blow us up, you have nothing."
Again, Ethan playing poker is best Ethan. I have no idea whether or not he can memorize all of the numbers or anything like that. I don't think that matters to the scene.
No, and Ethan, right? And you know, Lane has to trust that, like, if he blows him up, what if it's true?
Yeah.
So he can't, it's not really a risk he's willing to take. He's done so much to get to this point. He can't just blow it up and hope that he was bluffing.
Yeah, no, it was beautifully done. I really liked this. And the whole sort of moving on to the suicide gambit, where he's like, "Nope, keep them away or shoot me in the head. Let's do everything we can to threaten my life until Benji gets to go away."
Like, he even gives him $50 million, like says, "Here's the details for $50 million, transfer it now to see that I'm telling the truth," kind of thing, which he does, and it's true. So he's like, stops the bomb like a few seconds away. And Benji's like, because Benji's the one communicating, like he's just saying all the stuff that Lane is saying. And then when Poyser's like, "This is me talking, by the way. One day, I told you one day you're going to take this way too far, hey,
it's
dude."
It's like, you've gone a little bit too far here.
Because this is in the middle of, like, this is like near London Bridge.
Mm.
Like, so if that blows up, that's a pretty big deal. So yeah, Lane kind of has no choice but to believe him. He ends up giving Benji the code so Benji can take the jacket off and is no longer at risk. And Ethan's kind of giving himself up as the replacement hostage kind of thing, I guess you would say.
Mm.
Meanwhile, Lane's like, "Oh, the bone doctor's there watching from a distance. It's like, what do you want me to do?" He's like, "Kill her. I need Ethan alive." And then there's a big shootout, which would be terrifying. Imagine having your dinner near the fucking London Bridge and suddenly there's a fucking shootout. My God. This is where we finally see some Ethan Hunt running, some Tom Cruise running. Finally, it's actually still not that much. Like, they're running through some cobbled streets. He and Ilsa are off together. They're bashing up a few bad guys who come out. There's heaps of them coming out from everywhere. A car comes, they shoot the car. Ethan finally gets to do his jumping over a car without falling over, which is, making up
for
it.
Very sweet looking.
Yeah, just real shoom, over the top. They, at one point, they sort of get separated. Ethan gets kicked through a window. And I actually wrote down, I think this might be a new Tom Cruise-ism, is where he gets injured and starts hobbling, because there's been a few instances in the, maybe it's just more of an Ethan Hunt-ism, where he gets injured and just has to hobble away and just keeps going, even though he's severely, severely injured. I just noticed that. Ilsa gets confronted by the bone doctor and they decide to have a knife fight. Good old-fashioned knife fight.
Oh, yeah. Every hit in this movie looks like it hurt.
Mm.
Like, it's a very, very well choreographed fight scene style movie where everyone sells everything. They get hit real hard, it looks like.
Yeah, they're like slashing each other and a few stabs in the legs and stuff. Like, how?
This is a really good use. It's been a while since I've seen a good knife fight, right?
Yeah, we really don't get to see much. Yeah. It's usually gun fights or fist fights.
Or sword fights.
Also the odd sword fight.
Yeah, with sword fights, you've got a lot of, you know, flinning and a lot of balance and things like that. You can do a lot with a sword. But no, this was literally just trying to stab you while keeping out of your stabbing range.
Yeah. And Bone Doctor's a big guy too. Mm. So Nilsa's like very small and nimble. So it wasn't a super fair, except she's small and nimble. So she can kind of go stab, stab before he has a chance to get around. So
yeah, it was really, really good. And of course, we've got to talk about the ending.
Yeah. Yeah, so you remember we were talking about her cool climbs up, gets up behind them on their neck and then, you know, disarms or whatever. In this case, she does it. She climbs up, swings around, and then just stabs him up through the chin, up through his head.
It was delicious. And I'm loving that signature move. Like, it's so instantly distinctive. It's so good.
And it's not something you'd ever, unless you know her really well personally, not something you'd expect. Like, you know, it's this tiny, strong woman just to climb up you and, like, knock your head off or whatever and stab you in the face.
Yeah, it was. Like, and it was really good to see that come back
as
something that she knows how to do. And this movie actually had, now that I think about it, a lot of really good callbacks, not just to itself, but also to the other Mission Impossible movies. I really liked that the first scene where we see the director of the CIA calling the MIF on their stuff is literally, this is all of the stuff in the previous movie that caused massive property damage and did not give us any intelligence. The Kremlin exploded. You stole from the CIA in the first... And I was like, oh, okay, so that's what we're doing here now. We're trying to turn this into a series.
Even Huntley says, like, my first dealings with the IMF were when I was working at the CIA and they fucking busted in and stole shit from us, like, from the first movie. So, yeah, they actually do, like, are making this more of a special little world.
Yeah, and it was really nice to see that this movie was actually the stuff that we're seeing get set up, get paid off.
Yeah.
And what's great about a lot of these is that you don't actually realize they're a setup. You think they're just a cool moment in the movie until it comes back to a massive, you know, audience cheer.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really cool little aspect of the
Very
movie.
Very nice. So meanwhile, Ethan's limping around and we see Lane, and it's kind of like that horror movie thing where the bad guy's just slowly walking and the good guy's like, oh God. And then he just keeps following him and never like losing momentum. So Ethan like smashes through a window into like this empty building that's like a construction site. You see Lane is still following him. And so there's a big like open hole in the floor. So Ethan just slides down and falls down there. So when Lane comes up and looks down, Ethan's like lying there like, shit, I've been had. Like, Lane, you've got me. So Lane just nimbly jumps down and is like, finally, we can fight each other one-on-one. And Ethan's like, can you though? Can you? And this weird like glass door thing just goes shoop in front of him. And someone's like, what the fuck? And starts to try to shoot. And then suddenly Benji appears and Luther and everyone appears. And he starts shooting. And then he realizes he's actually in a glass box, much like how Ethan was captured at the start of the movie. And they're like, everyone. This is Solomon Lane. Solomon Lane, this is everyone. We've caught you. And Lane's like, and they fill it with gas. And
He pops off, like, I counted somewhere around 30 rounds without reloading out of his little handgun, which was really, really nice. And again, it called back to the opening scene in the record store, which I love because, you know, of course, Ethan's trapped in a glass box. He tries to shoot the glass. Turns out it's a real reverse. And one of the things that they talk about in this movie is how the syndicate is an anti-MIF. They're like the opposite. And what they're doing here is that Solomon is supposed to be the evil Ethan Hunt who prepares for everything and knows what everyone's moves are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Ethan does the Ethan thing and knows what, of course, this is what I would do in this situation. So this is what you're going to do. And it's just, it's really, really nice to sort of see that level of interplay between, you know, because the villains in the Mission Impossible movies have never been as intricate, I don't think.
No, they've been a bit more brash in their approaches. Like you look at in the third movie, how
Philip Seymour Hoffman
was just like, everything gets blown up. He was an arms dealer. So I guess maybe that's a little bit of the difference is that different kinds of criminals. But yeah, like someone so intelligent and so on the same page in terms of skills as Ethan. And it's also, Ethan could be Solomon Lane if Ethan turned bad, which he never will, let's be honest. But if he did, then he would be Solomon Lane. He'd be almost impossible. And so only those two. It's kind of like the Joker and Batman thing. Like, they need each other, kind of.
The other thing that I really liked about this as well is it's made very clear that Solomon wasn't killed.
Yes.
And that's, I think, the first time we've seen one of the bad guys survive.
Yes, because if he does die, then they've got no proof of the syndicate and Ethan might still be in trouble. So kind of had no choice, but I'm glad they kept him alive because the amount they could learn from him, and also they need to get, Atlee needs to get in some trouble for what he's done.
And on the whole, this movie had a lower body count than I think most of the other Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, probably did actually. Yeah.
Obviously there were some justifiable deaths.
Yes.
But it's nice to see, you know, like the bad guy didn't have their head knocked off. off or wasn't hit by a car or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was actually it seemed like a real effort, Ethan trying not to kill people.
Yeah, because even in the first Mission Impossible, I don't think he uses a gun. I don't think he fires a gun once.
No, I don't think he does.
So I think they were kind of setting up, like, it's not just wham, bam, kill everyone you can sort of thing.
Yeah.
Ethan's more about what smart ways can we go about bringing our bad guys in. So yeah, he's put into this box. Ethan just knocks the box over. They put it into a truck and says goodbye to Ilsa. It seems like she's going to go off and make her own way in the world. They have a nice big tender moment where they have a nice big hug and she's like, you have what you need to find me. Setting it up for another movie. But yeah, she goes off and they've caught our bad guy. And we sort of finish the movie on Huntley, where they started off with, in this like tribunal court kind of thing. And Huntley is now fighting for the IMF. And he's actually, they're like, hang on a minute, you're the one who wanted to disband it. And he's like, well, actually, we had to pretend, we needed to disband it to help Ethan facilitate this thing because, you know, if the IMF was still allowed to operate, it would blow his cover kind of thing. So yeah, it was all a big elaborate plan. And yeah, so the IMF is reinstated and the new secretary is now Alec Baldwin, aka Huntley. And what a nice package, little bow on top.
It's really good. I really liked that they wrap, and this is a thing, it's interesting, Mission Impossible movies always wrap up relatively nicely. But this and the last one to a lesser degree, but they also keep it open enough that you know that there's going to be more of this franchise, which is, it's really good that they've been able to do that, wrap it up
so that if there's no more movies,
yeah,
it's fine, but also it's still just a little bit open so that,
yeah, so
we
that
can see some more adventures.
They've got some string to pull on to make the next movie really, really interesting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for you to watch Mission Impossible Fallout, because if you like this movie, I don't think anyone can watch Fallout and not love it, especially if you like action movies, but really good. So I look forward to hearing what you have to say about that.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Rogue Nation also, because we didn't mention it, refers to what Solomon Lane's trying to do. He's trying to create his own Rogue Nation to do
all, which is why he needs the startup money that's on the red box. It's, yeah.
Yeah, it all comes together very nicely. So let's have a little chat about Tom Cruise-isms. Not a huge amount in this one.
No.
So running was minimal. I mean, obviously stunts, just 10 million stunts everywhere you look, stunts. And yeah, if you can see the behind the scenes on like the Blu-ray or whatever, I highly recommend them because Christopher McQuarrie loves sharing all that stuff. So they go into detail, like how they set up for everything, and it's magnificent. So yeah, stunts, or obviously Tom Cruise, Rebecca Ferguson, I think, did a lot of her stunts. They show how they did the car going down the steps and everything, like all those car chases. So yeah, really, really good stunts. But like, yeah, apart from that, not a lot. I mean, that's why I was like, is Ethan Hunt limping now, kind of? Because it happens in a bunch. Like, it happens in the last Mission Impossible. It happens this one. Happens in the next one. So it's kind of a bit more of an Ethan Huntism.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, what else? Like, we don't get that. We don't really get like Tom Cruise doing his like bewildered kind of like what the fuck kind of expression.
Oh, we got once.
Did we?
When the concert hall fight.
Yeah.
When the beam rose up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did too. We got
got that one. I can't,
he's like,
do that.
What the? Yeah.
Why?
It's kind of like that. Yeah, that Tom Cruise kind of like, what kind of face? We didn't get his, you know, the Tom Cruise big smile clap kind of thing that Tom Cruise loves to do.
There was no laugh.
No laugh. No Tom Cruise laugh. Yeah. So even though there was a little bit of comedy, like the comedy happened when Tom Cruise was barely alive, racing in a car. So
it's the first time that I can remember Tom Cruise actively being comedic. Like he was doing like I said, it was like a Three Stooges, very deliberately, I'm trying to make you laugh.
Yep.
Stuff. And it's really good. It's a sign of a good comedian that he wasn't laughing at his own jokes. Mm. He was just dealing with it. And I think maybe because that scene was so funny is why he decided not to laugh in that movie.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I really like how they've brought, because the last movie where they brought a lot more comedy in than had been in the three previous films. And I won't spoil anything for the next movie, so you can all just watch that yourselves. But yeah, I really like that because there's so much going on. It's so intense. Like, you just need to be able to go, ha ha, that was really funny. And thank God I can like relax and exhale for a moment. Yeah, so Tom Cruise-isms, there actually aren't a lot. There's no grenades, because we know Tom Cruise loves pulling out grenades mysteriously. None of that. So yeah, very minimal. Tom Cruise-isms, but that's okay. You can't all
can't
be,
win them all.
We can't be all like Mission Impossible 3 where it's 17 minutes of Tom Cruise running, which is still fine. But yeah, let's, in that case, we're at the point where we might be able to rate this movie. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Oh, why don't you go first?
Okay.
Give me a feeling of what you thought.
Well, to clarify, so I really like this movie. The stunts are really great, but it's not my favorite. Obviously, Fallout's favorite. If you don't know that by now, you have obviously only just joined this podcast because it's all I talk about. Yeah, I think 3 and 4 are my next favorite. So even though this movie fucking rules, there's so many. I love so many of the other movies as well. It's really hard. I mean, basically, 2 is down the bottom. Like even 1 I love, but it would probably be my second least favorite movie because just by virtue of the other ones being so good. Anyway, I really love this movie. I'm going to give it 4.5 sexy jumping off a pole shirtless.
Okay.
Out of 5.
Okay.
I don't know how to describe that, but yeah, honestly, I'm going to share a video of that on my social media because it is
incredible.
It is an incredible use of Tom Cruise's strength and his handsome body. And yeah, I'm going to share that. So yeah, I'm going to go 4.5 because I can't get to 5 yet because we haven't watched Fallout yet.
Well, okay. So I'm really interested to see Fallout now because I've binged watched these in preparation to watch this movie to try and there's certain things that I've picked up and there's certain stuff. This is the first time where genuinely I thought not only does everything make sense, but everything is also rolling at the right pace and everything is coherent. Nothing is sort of there's no wasted movement in mm-hmm. this movie. Everything that they do moves the plot forward or
yeah.
moves some character forward. And I really, really like that. Again, it's hard because I didn't like 3 much and 2 is a nightmare. 4, I got. 4 was very, started to show some of the character that these movies are starting to have, but this was just a smorgasbord of how much fun these movies can be. So I'm actually going to give it 5 shirtless pole jumps. 5 shirtless pole jumps out of 5.
Nice.
What this does mean is that I may actually break the rating system if we decide to do Fallout.
Yeah, I reckon Fallout is going to be where we break all of that. But yeah, 5, that's awesome. I'm really glad that you really enjoyed this movie.
It was really good. And it was nice to sort of, I have a better feeling of what they're trying to do with these movies
yes.
now, as opposed to the first 3, which felt a little bit disjointed and incoherent. It was really good to sort of see a direction
mm-hmm.
starting to form in 4 and get a much more solid in the
which
5th one.
Maybe why they decided Christa McCrory is like, that was really good, man. You just want to keep going? He's like, yeah.
It is also one really quick thing that I wanted to mention as well is
yep.
that this is the second time that they did the TV style credits introduction.
I think it's the first, because the first one had it.
Oh, yeah.
The first one
had
and
it
then
too.
The second and third ditched it. And
yeah.
I was like, hey, what the? And then they brought it back for 4. 5,
yeah.
And 6.
And it's really, really good. I like, it's such a good plot device and it does sort of link it back to the TV show that it's based on.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that because instantly I knew that's someone I have to pay attention to when they show up on screen. It's a really, really clever little narrative device.
Yeah, it's really cute. And yeah, if you've never watched the movie and it's all new to you, you wouldn't know to pick up and you wouldn't pick up on much. But yeah, you can watch it and go, okay, I see what's happening here. So yeah, it's a really clever little device and I love it. And I'm glad they've decided to continue with it. Well, I think that's probably it for us. We've now reviewed the movie, we've rated it, and yeah, once again, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at roleplay_James, or you can hire me to run your role-playing game at gmforhire.com.au.
Wonderful. Once again, it's Tom Cruise Reviews on Instagram, Tom Cruise Review without the S on Twitter, or just my website, tomcruisereviews.com. Once again, Jimmy, thank you so much for joining us and dissecting that movie beautifully.
Thanks for having me. This is a blast.
Wonderful. Catch us next week. We're going to do a little mini-sode, so you can listen to our dulcet tones once again next week. And in the meantime, we'll catch you then.
Bye.